A teacher in New York decided to honor each of her seniors in high school by telling them the difference that they made. She called each student to the front of the class, one at a time. First, she told the class how the student made a difference to her and to the class. Then she presented each of them with a blue ribbon imprinted with white letters which read, "Who I am makes a difference." Afterwards, the teacher decided to do a class project to see what kind of impact recognition would have on a community. She gave each of the students three more ribbons and instructed them to go out and spread this acknowledgement ceremony. Then they were to follow up on the results to see who honored whom and report back to the class in about a week. One of the boys in the class went to a junior executive in a nearby company and honored him for helping him with his career planning. He gave him a blue ribbon and put it on his shirt. Then he gave him two extra ribbons and said, "We're doing a class project on recognition, and we'd like you to go out, find somebody to honor, give them a blue ribbon, and then give them the extra blue ribbon so that they can acknowledge a third person to keep this acknowledgement ceremony going. Then please back report to me what happened." Later that day, the junior executive went in to see his boss, who had been noted, by the way, as being kind of a grouchy fellow. He sat his boss down and told him that he deeply admired him for being a creative genius. The boss seemed very surprised. The junior executive asked him if he would accept the gift of the blue ribbon and would he give him permission to put it on him. The surprised boss said, "Well, sure." The junior executive took the blue ribbon, placed it right on his boss's jacket above his heart. As he gave him the last ribbon, he said, "Would you do me a favor? Would you take this extra ribbon and pass it on by honoring someone else? The young boy who first gave me the ribbons is doing a project in school, and we want to keep this recognition ceremony going and find out how it affects people." That night, the boss came home to his 14-year-old son and sat him down. He said, "Son, the most incredible thing happened to me today. I was in my office, and one of the junior executives came in and told me he admired me and gave me a blue ribbon for being a creative genius. Imagine! He thinks I'm a creative genius." Then he put this blue ribbon that says, "Who I am makes a difference," on my jacket above my heart. He gave me an extra ribbon, and he asked me to find somebody else to honor. As I was driving home tonight, I started thinking about who I would honor with this ribbon, and I thought about you. Son, I want to honor you. My days are really hectic, and when I come home, I often don't pay a lot of attention to you. Sometimes I scream at you for not getting good enough grades in school and for your bedroom being a mess. But tonight, I just want to sit here and, well, I just want you to know that you do make a difference to me. Besides your mother, you are the most important person in my life. You're a great kid, and I love you. The startled boy started to sob. He couldn't stop crying. His whole body shook. He looked up at his father and said through his tears, "Dad, I was planning on committing suicide because I didn't think you loved me. Now I don't need to." There's so much power in encouragement. So today we want to talk about becoming an encourager. And yesterday when I was talking about the spiritual gifts, I noted that one of the spiritual gifts is encouragement. Which means that the people who have the gift of encouragement are supernaturally equipped to encourage other people, but that doesn't mean that only the people with the spiritual gift of encouragement are to be encouragers. In Hebrews, take a look with me at a couple verses in Hebrews that tell us what God thinks about encouragement. If you would, turn to Hebrews 3:13. Encouragement is very important for God, to God, that we do it to each other. Hebrews 3:13 says, "But encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." Do you see the connection between encouragement and the consequence of it? If we encourage each other, it means that we can help each other not to be, have our hearts hardened by sin. But then look over a few pages at Hebrews 10:24. Verses 24 and 25 of Hebrews 10 say, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds," which is a good description of what encouragement is. "Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day," that's the day of the Lord's return, "approaching." God wants us to encourage each other because we desperately need it. We need it for several reasons, but one of them is that it makes a difference in if we're going to have our hearts be hardened by sin. But I'd like to look at some reasons why we need encouragement. First of all, we live in a fallen world where nothing is the way it was originally planned, where we are so much less than we were intended to be, where we're surrounded by other fallen people who hurt and disappoint us, either through ignorance or insensitivity or malice. Sometimes we think, when Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, you know, we talk about that as the fall, and it's easy to think of that as a stumble, a little oopsie in the garden. It was far more than a little oopsie in the garden. Think more like falling off the top of the Empire State Building. It is a miracle that any of us can even function. It was such a huge fall from whence we came. We were at such a height of holiness and perfection and beauty and strength, and we have fallen and splattered on the pavement below, and we need to encourage each other because we live in a fallen world. But secondly, we are also leaky buckets. And I can't see the screen very well. Because we live in a fallen world and we're leaky buckets, we constantly need to be affirmed and to have people refill our buckets for us. Because the encouragement and the affirmation that we receive from other people leaks out. And when that happens, we forget what is true. And it's real easy to believe the lies that come from the world, the flesh, and the devil. And a real encouragement tells us what is true and reminds us of what is everlasting. Not only are we leaky buckets, but sometimes people kick over our buckets on purpose, don't they? One time I was driving on Central, and I really needed to merge into a lane. And I've got my blinker on, and I'm trying to get in. And I looked. I didn't have my sunglasses on or anything. I looked at the guy who was closest to me expectantly, and he looked at me, shook his head, and went, "No." And I thought, "You don't know who you just cut off. I'm a princess. You just said no to Her Royal Highness." He kicked over my bucket. Fortunately, Jesus is really good at, you know, refilling it, but we're leaky buckets, and so we need encouragement. We also have two God-given needs, one for relationship, one for significance. We have this need for relationship to be connected to other people, and we've got this need for significance to be a difference maker in our lives. That the world will be different because we were here. Incidentally, that God-given drive to be a difference maker, to make a mark on the world, I believe is what is behind graffiti. You know, you see that all over the place. It's usually done by young men who are very frustrated by the culture that makes it so hard for them to make a difference, particularly because they have a hard time making a difference in other people's lives because guys are not as relational as girls. So they get a can of spray paint, and they have literally made a mark on the world. They are a difference maker. It's not necessarily for good, but they are. I think it's a twisted appropriation of that desire to make a difference. And because we've got these two God-given needs for relationship and significance, we also have two big fears that those needs won't be met. that need for that relationship that God gave us, we fear that that need won't be met and we will experience rejection. Because that's what happens when that need for relationship isn't met, we experience rejection. And that need for significance, we fear that we'll get the message that we just really don't matter. We fear not mattering. And so encouragement is anti-rejection medicine, so to speak. We need to communicate to other people that they matter. There's a story about a man who was taking a walk on the beach, and far down the beach he saw a young man doing what looked like ballet movements. He was reaching down to the ground and then springing up, and reaching down to the ground and springing up. And as he made his way toward this young man, what he saw he was doing, he was picking up a starfish and flinging it back into the water. And he would walk down the beach a little bit farther, find another starfish beached, pick it up, and fling it into the water. And so this man made his way down to the young starfish thrower, and he said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "The starfish are beached here, and if they're going to dry out if they don't get back in the water, so I'm throwing them back in." And he said, "Boy, there are thousands of starfish that get washed up with the tide. You can't possibly save them all. You can't possibly make a difference for all those starfish." And the boy looked at him and he thought about it for a minute. And he walked a little bit, a few feet down the beach. He picked up another starfish and flung it out into the ocean and said, "It made a difference for that one." It's true. We can't make a difference for every single person, but we can make a difference for that one, whichever that one that God allows us to encounter. About the time that Mother Teresa won the Nobel Peace Prize, she was in New York, and a reporter stopped her, or maybe it was a press conference, and said, "Mother Teresa, you take care of the downtrodden and the sickly, and society's outcasts in India, but there are millions of downcast, sickly, downtrodden people in India. You can't possibly take care of them all. Why do you do this? You cannot make that big of a difference." And Mother Teresa said, "God has not called us to success, but to faithfulness." I love that word of wisdom, because God defines success not the way the world does, which is basically all or nothing. You know, you've got to save them all or you can't save any. And she says, "I've just called to be faithful to what God has called me to do." And sometimes there are starfish on the beach and God says, "Make a difference for that one." Encouragement feeds those two deep heart needs for relationship and significance. In terms of feeding the need for relationship, encouragement says, "You are accepted. I accept you the way you are." And in terms of that need for significance, encouragement says, "You matter to God, so you matter to me." I want to share with you some principles of encouragement. Scott Peck said once that encouragement is the oxygen of the soul. That is so true. Sometimes we are absolutely dying for some fresh encouragement, some fresh oxygen. Encouragement makes people want to do and be better than they are. Not too long ago, Ray and I watched the movie As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt, and there's such a great line in there. It's not just romantic. It's really about encouragement, where Jack Nicholson, who is an obsessive compulsive guy off the edge of the scale, is developing a relationship with a waitress Helen Hunt plays, and he says to her, "You make me want to be a better man." And encouragement helps us to want to be better than we are, helps us want to do better than we are. First of all, encouragers are authentic and transparent. An encourager admits and experiences their own feelings of discouragement and pain and depression. In order to really be an encourager, you've got to be in touch with the fact that, hello, we live in a fallen world. And none of us are exempt from the pain of living in that world. So encouragers know how to take off their masks and show how human they are. So that when an encourager says, I know how you feel, the other person feels comforted, not patronized. That's why tears for another person are so powerful. The Lord showed me a number of years ago that I still have an unhealed wound in my soul that will always remain unhealed until I get to heaven, I think, by His grace, because we lost our first baby. She only lived for 9 days. And burying a child is a very painful experience. But what I discovered, it's not a trouble, you know, that was 26 years ago. And, you know, I go for a long time without seriously thinking about Becky. But when I'm talking with another mom who has lost a child, I cry with them because of that unhealed place in my soul. The compassion is very real, and they can see it on my face. It's God's gift that I'm not over it. Someone once said that when you bury a child, you never get over it. You just get through it. And I think that's very true. And I've come to see that because of that almost unhealed place in my soul that still allows me to cry, to weep with those who weep, that is an encouragement that way. It's wonderful when we can connect with somebody else on a painful level. A store owner was tacking a sign above his door that read, "Puppies for sale." Signs like that have a way of attracting small children, and sure enough, a little boy appeared under the store owner's sign. "How much are you going to sell the puppies for?" he asked. The store owner replied, "Anywhere from $30 to $50. The little boy reached into his pocket and pulled out some change. "I have $2.37, he said. "Can I please look at them?" The store owner smiled and whistled, and out of a kennel came Lady, who ran down the aisle of his store, followed by 5 teeny tiny balls of fur. One puppy was lagging behind considerably. Immediately, the little boy singled out the lagging, limping puppy and said, "What's wrong with that little dog?" The store owner explained that the veterinarian had examined the little puppy and had discovered it didn't have a hip socket. It would always limp. It would always be lame. The little boy became excited. "That is the puppy I want to buy." The store owner said, "No, you don't want to buy that little dog. If you really want him, I'll just give him to you." And the little boy got quite upset. He looked straight into the store owner's eyes, pointing his finger, and said, "I don't want you to give him to me. That little dog is worth every bit as much as the other dogs, and I'll pay full price. In fact, I will give you $2.37 today and 50 cents a month until I pay him off." The store owner countered, "You don't really want to buy this little dog. He's never going to be able to run and jump and play with you like the other puppies." To his surprise, the little boy reached down and rolled up his pant leg to reveal a badly twisted, crippled left leg supported by a big metal brace. He looked up at the store owner and softly replied, "Well, I don't run so well myself, and the little puppy will need someone who understands." Needless to say, that story is very dear to my heart, particularly the part about you don't give him away. He's worth every penny as much as the other ones. Do you realize that that's the way God looks at us? It says you are broken and you are crippled and you are handicapped and you are worth full price, and I am willing to pay that price for you. Do you have any idea how encouraging that should be? And if it isn't, please let that truth soak down into your soul and bring sunlight to the dark places of your heart. Encouragers are sensitive because they know what it is to need encouragement. And encouragers who know what it is to need encouragement don't use scripture like a baseball bat. Thank you. I don't know if anybody has ever used Romans 8:28 on you. But if you're in pain and something horrible has happened and somebody says, "Well, just remember that God causes all things to work together for good for those that love God and are called according to His purpose." You know, that is true, and it can be encouraging when you repeat it to yourself, but somebody else who isn't experiencing your pain It can feel like a baseball bat that's bludgeoning you. Jesus doesn't use scripture as a baseball bat. If we're in pain, if you're in pain, he would come up and hug you and hold your hand and tell you he loves you and he's so sorry. Jesus knows just how to encourage people. And because we are the body of Christ and we are Jesus with skin on to each other, when we encourage each other, we are Jesus with skin on encouraging us. Another principle of encouragement is that encouragers don't judge people. They are grace givers. Usually when we fly anymore, you leave the gate and go down a jetway and boom, you're on the plane. But in some airports, you know, you have to go on, they push the great big stairs up to the plane. And in some airports, I was one in the Bahamas, we got off the plane going down the stairs, were taken by bus to the terminal, and then had to go up some more stairs in order to get into the airport. And there was an older woman who probably had had knee replacement surgery or needed it, and she was going up the stairs, and she was doing it one very painful step at a time. And I was kind of at the end of the line, and I saw people, you know, these stairways are not very large, and I'm seeing people push and rush by her like, "Lady, get out of my way." And I thought, oh, you dear, sweet woman, you know, you are very aware that these people are hurried and they're rushed and they're, you know, you are inconveniencing them and they have to squeeze to get by you. And I just wanted to go up and pat her on the back and go, "I'm right behind you." Except I'm not right behind you. I'm also going kind of slowly myself, you know, but just wanted to pat her on the back and say, "You take your time. It's going to be okay." Because I've been there. And I knew how to encourage her. And part of that wasn't trying to press to get by. If we have a grasp of our own weakness and our own sinfulness and our own brokenness, we will treat others with grace. I remember hearing or seeing a TV interview with John Tesh, who used to be on Entertainment Tonight, and now he does mainly music. And he's a believer. And he said, I think it was on the 700 Club or something, and he said, you know, non-Christians are afraid of being judged by Christians. And I thought, Christians are afraid of being judged by other Christians as well. We have a tendency to rush to judgment so often, don't we? And one of the words of wisdom that has really taken root in my soul is the truth that all the available facts are not all the facts. We only see things from a very limited perspective. And when we judge people, we are judging on the basis of a limited number of facts, and we never see the whole picture. That is one of the reasons that I really love wearing this ring. I don't know if you've noticed it, but it's very large and it's sparkly, and I know that people think, "You guys work with Probe Ministries. They don't pay you that much money there." It's like, what's up with that? And I know, but I'm not going to go around telling the whole world, that first of all, this is not a real diamond. It's a CZ. Secondly, my aunt left it to me, which is the way someone told me to put it. The reality is my aunt died, my mom got all of her jewelry, and then when mom dad died, I grabbed it. And my mom and my aunt was in Florida, my mom's in Chicago, and the two of them would watch the Home Shopping Network on the phone together. That's one of the things that they would do to kind of enjoy their friendship. And both of them saw this ring one day, and my aunt had more money than my mom. And they would often buy the same thing, or my mom would buy a smaller, cheaper version of what my aunt would get. And so this became my mother's when my aunt died, and then when my mother died, it became mine. And I have three other sisters, so I just really scored well. I was very grateful for that. And I look at this ring, and I'm thinking, it's really easy to make a judgment about this ring that is leaving out the most important facts. The reason I like it is I like sparkly things. I like shiny things. Yes, I am a princess. I like shiny, sparkly things. But they also, shiny, sparkly things remind me of heaven, where everything is full of glory and splendor and effulgence and majesty and brilliance, and there's lots of light in heaven. And so sparkly things, and that's my reason. Sounds very spiritual, doesn't it? The reality is I just like sparkly things. But it reminds me to withhold judgment on people because I don't have all the facts. And encouragers, people who are really good at encouraging, that's one of the things that they can do is withhold judgment. Encouragers communicate acceptance when someone is exposed. Shame is about feeling exposed, and we desperately need the grace of acceptance when we are burning with shame. Now, there's different ways to feel exposed. We can expose ourselves when we drop our masks and we let others know our needs and our brokenness and our sinfulness. Or we can be exposed by life experiences against our will. There are so many people in the Dallas area who have had to file bankruptcy, and that is a tremendous feeling of shame and exposure that's kind of forced upon you. But then there are times when we expose ourselves just to let others know, this is who I really am. A number of years ago, I was swimming with the health club, and the Lord convicted me that I needed to stand before our women's Bible study at my church and confess a sin that I had been engaged in several years before. It's like, you don't really mean that, do you? Yes, I want you to tell these women what happened. And I said, ooh, ouch, that's really painful, but okay, if you want me to, I will, because I knew I needed to obey. And I said, God, it's kind of weird to want to stand to say, excuse me, but I've got something I need to tell you guys. That's not the kind of thing that's usually on the agenda for Bible study. And I said, well, you'll have to create a situation in which that can come about. And like 2 days later, I get a call from the woman in charge of the Bible study saying, we're working on a book on prayer, and I would like you to take chapter 3 on such and such a date. Would you be okay with that? I said, sure. I look up chapter 3, public confession of sin. I kid you not. Oh, great. It's not, okay, I said make it passable, and you didn't have to be that blunt about it, you know. So I taught this section on public confession of sin, and I said, and now I want to give you an example. And what it was really doesn't matter. It wasn't one of those life-altering things. It was just an internal thing that had happened in my head. And so I confessed my sin to these women, and it was the most humbling, transparent, authentic thing that I had ever done in front of those women. And it was so wonderful. Well, one of the older women in the church, who is a Titus 2 woman to me, said, Sue, we want you to know we love you. And when I had exposed myself like that, and she comes back with the grace of acceptance, it just flooded my soul with encouragement. When someone is exposed or exposes themselves, an encourager communicates acceptance. Another principle of encouragement is that... there we go. Encouragers seek to give understanding, not advice. They seek to make the other person feel understood, not function as advice dispensers. Because people want to be heard and understood. They want somebody to listen to them and to take their feelings seriously. A lot of people are walking around thinking, I hurt. Do you care? You can make people feel understood without agreeing with them. God does that all the time. He understands us, but he doesn't agree with us when we are not in alignment with his will and his character, but he understands us. You don't sacrifice your own convictions and beliefs when you seek to understand someone else's. An encourager's work is to understand a problem, not to solve it. When someone tells us what's going on and we give quick advice, that communicates disrespect for the person and their problems. Because often when somebody says, I got to vent. I just need to tell you what's going on. They're not saying, solve my problem for me. They're saying, I just need to talk. If someone shares a problem or a need or their brokenness or whatever, and someone says to them, well, here's what you should do about that. That's maybe what is spoken, but what is heard is, your problem is simple, but you're too stupid to figure out a solution, so I'll tell you what to do. It's very disheartening and disrespecting for somebody to just whip out advice, which is one of the reasons why women need to explain to men that when we share our hearts, we are not asking for them to put their Mr. Fix-It hat on. What we are wanting is for them to listen, to say, oh, yeah, right, ooh, and the all-time great, poor baby. Men need to be taught what it means to listen to somebody without fixing the problem, but that's the male mentality, and it's a good thing to want to fix what is broken, but that's not what we need often. In the process of talking about our problems and feelings, we, as women especially, process verbally. We don't even know what we're thinking and feeling often until we release them through words. And so often, if a woman just has somebody to talk to, we can figure out what to do or even just get clarification for our own minds just by talking it over with somebody who listens and cares. Which is why, no matter what you do, be sure to pay your telephone bill, because you really need that connection with other women. And you can't always get in your car and go see somebody. Another principle of encouragement is that encouragers... Whoops. I went too far. Page up. There we go. Encouragers speak words of life because they understand the basic needs and fears of people. Really like this one. The basic needs of people, as I mentioned, are relationship and significance. The need is relationship. We fear rejection. And so what we can say to somebody to deal with this need and the fear that we have is, I love you. I'm here for you. With some people, it's appropriate, those in our family, to say, I'll always be here for you. To say, I'm so glad God brought you into my life. Our pastor has it's almost like a bit that he does with his kids. What he likes to say to them is, however did I get so blessed to be your daddy and get you for a son? And he's got three kids, and they all say, because God gave me to you. And that's what they say. He says this, they say that. And his kids know that they are God's gift to their father. What an incredible blessing. However did I get so blessed to be your daddy and have you for a son? Can you imagine how powerful it is to communicate that as a parent to a child? The other need we've got is for significance. And so the fear that we have is that we are actually unimportant and insignificant. So what we can say, the words of life that we can speak to address those needs are, I appreciate what you do. And we can say things like, great job. Or if somebody tried and they didn't even succeed, good try. You have touched my heart. You have changed my life. It's so important to let people know when they have impacted you. Let people know that they're loved. Let people know that they've made a difference. That is one of the reasons, if not the big reason, why It's a Wonderful Life is probably one of the all-time best movies ever made in the history of the universe. Because it made the point that you make a difference. You are important. You have had an impact on not just one or two people's lives, but an entire community. Sometimes an encourager encourages through playfulness, which is why last night was so great. The party that we had was about fun. It was about playing. It was dressing up and putting on costumes and laughing together and playing together in a very safe kind of play. Play means a lack of self-consciousness. If you've ever watched children play, they're not aware of what they're doing or how they're looking or how they're sounding. They just get in there and play. So have fun. Be silly. It'll lighten people's hearts. That would be silly string. All we have to do is pick it up.
Is it bubblegum
style? Is it edible? No, but if you want to try, I think it's not toxic. Yeah, it's not cheese whiz. What's the antidote? See, you weren't expecting that, but it made you laugh. Cindy saw this in my bag, and she said, I am worried, which is why I said, you should be. Be afraid. Be very afraid. You know, when we laugh, our bodies release endorphins, which are pleasure hormones. And so an encourager helps people to do things. Sometimes the appropriate thing to do is to help people to laugh so that they can release their endorphins. That's not always the appropriate thing to do, you know, but at the right time, that's a way to encourage somebody. Encouragers respect people and believe in them. There was a mentor who was mentoring a young minister, and he told him something one day that this person never forgot. He said, I want to tell you something. This afternoon, I'm buying stock in you as a person and as a minister. Right now, as you begin your ministry, the stock is not at a high. But one day, stock in you is going to pay big dividends, and I'm buying into it right now because I believe in you and in your response to the plan God has for your life. Can you imagine the impact that that must have had on that young minister at the beginning of his ministry? It's not that we're naive to people's faults. It's not that we believe that they're perfect. We just choose to believe in them because it's a God-like thing to do. This is one of my favorite poems, People Maker by Virginia Satir. You are a people maker. Look, you smile and they come to life. You frown, they wilt. You pull within yourself, they retreat. But when you aim belief at them, they rush forth from all kinds of dungeons, and they are beautiful. You are a people maker. God is the people maker, but he uses us to do it. God believes in us, not because of anything intrinsic within us, but because it's about his plan for our lives. Philippians 1:6 says, he who began a good work in you will continue to complete it. He's hard at work. We're all looking into the mirror of someone else's face. And when we see somebody, or when they look at our face, is what they see, oh, it's you, or, oh, it's you. There's a great power in encouraging people by the way we respond to their presence. I want to give you some specific examples of how to be an encourager. First of all, be verbally sensitive. Those who need encouragement drop subtle clues about what's happening inside. They're looking for signs that the person that they're talking to is attentive and accepting and sensitive. For example, you say to somebody, how are you? And the other person says, oh, pretty good, I guess, under the circumstances. What if you respond by saying, yeah, it takes a lot to stay on top of things. Good to see you. Or somebody says, pretty good under the circumstances, and they go, good, good. Were they listening? Encouragers must learn the skill of listening beneath the words and listen for coded messages. What was the coded message there? Under the circumstances. That was a hint. Are you listening? You know, people are saying, something's not right. Are you listening? Do you care? Will you pursue me enough on that? People who need encouragement will often be very, very subtle about their need for encouragement, but they're not going to come right out and say, "Hi, I need encouragement." You know, they're not going to do that. So we need to be verbally sensitive, which is one of the reasons why women are often better encouragers than men, because we pick up on verbal and nonverbal cues better than men. God made our brains different, and that's one of the things we do, but we also encourage each other and train each other in that. But we also need to be visually sensitive. People who have, you know, frowns or facial grimaces or slumped shoulders or quiet sighs, a lifeless tone of voice, moist or hurt eyes, their bodies are saying, "I am in pain." And so be on the lookout, because our bodies reflect what's going on inside. Offer door openers. Like, for example, the person that said, "Oh, pretty good, I guess, under the circumstances," you can say, "Oh," which is an invitation. Keep talking. Or, what do you mean? Or you can repeat the key hint, "Under the circumstances." It's amazing how far you can get by just repeating the last thing somebody said. It is a continual door opener to the next level of the conversation. And we also need to sometimes offer door openers to visual clues. Like somebody with moist eyes, you can go up to them and say, "You look like you're hurting." That's an invitation to say what they, you know, to tell them what's going on. One Sunday morning, I was at church, and I got something in my eye. And I went to the bathroom, and I used the liquid soap to clean my, I've got hard contact lenses, so you can do that, okay? So I cleaned my lens, didn't rinse it enough. And I put it back in my eye, and bing, it's just fire, you know? And I couldn't get the lens out very quickly, you know? It was like it was stuck in there. And so my eye is just, I'm crying. I cried all the makeup off of one eye. That is just kind of strange looking, you know? And I didn't have, I don't bring makeup to church with me. You know, I get myself ready in the morning and that's it. And so I'm thinking, okay, this is interesting. So I leave the bathroom once I'm no longer in great pain. And I can't tell you how many people came up to me going, "Do you need me to pray with you?" No, it's just a contact lens problem. But thank you, I will remember that when I do need you to pray with me. But I appreciated the fact that people were visually sensitive to what was going on. When we offer door openers to people, saying, "If you're interested in talking to me, I'm interested in listening," it transmits two messages. First of all, I'm interested in whatever you have to say, which communicates you are important. And secondly, I'm going to accept whatever you tell me, no matter what you say, which communicates you are loved. And that's what we need when we need encouragement. Another concept is that we need to be sensitive to timing. If particularly when someone has failed, that's when they need encouragement the most. Larry Crabb tells a story about a girl who made some spectacular failure. I forget if it was in school or what. And her parents didn't condemn her. They sent her flowers. Didn't even, you know, didn't have to go into great words or anything, just, "We love you." In our house, we have the red plate, the one that says, "You are special today," at the top and the bottom. And I use it for birthdays and special days. And if someone is visiting us, we'll go off and give them the red plate. But sometimes the best times to use the red plate are after a really, really bad, hard day. Or a great disappointment, just to say, "You're special. We're not going to beat you up when you have failed or you you haven't had a good experience. We're going to encourage you." We also need to develop our nonverbal skills. And one author gives the acrostic SOLAR. S is for squarely face the other person, meaning it's like you sit opposite this person and you give them your focused attention so that they know, "I'm completely here for you." I have really learned the power of this with my little men from Mars. And I have two sons, that the whole time when they were little, I engaged with them as if they were generic children. It wasn't until I read John Gray's book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and I really started owning the differences between men and women, between boys and girls. And I realized where I had blown it a lot is that women are able to multitask. Our hands can be busy, and our brains do not cease to function. But it's real hard for boys and men to really understand that. Particularly, my husband gets it, but my sons didn't. Because they can only do one thing at a time. The male brain, for the most part, is very linear. They can only process one thing at a time. If I was doing dishes or doing calligraphy or doing anything where my hands were busy and I was, you know, looking at it, and I was having a conversation with one of my sons, they didn't understand that I was really engaged with them. And I was listening, and I was concentrating on what they said. I did not realize till much later that their male brain could not relate to mom is paying attention to me, but her hands are busy. And so when I learned that, I said, okay, in order for me to show respect to them because they're male and they've got a different way of relating and a different way of interacting, when they started a conversation with me, I would stop whatever I was doing and put my hands down and turn my body to them so I was facing them. And what I was saying with my body is, I have nothing else that I'm doing right now. Nothing else is engaging another part of my brain. You are the most important thing. You are the only thing on my radar screen right now. It made the most amazing difference in my relationship with my sons when I started squarely facing them, putting my hands down, and doing nothing but having conversation with them. They felt respected in a way that they hadn't before. I was not giving them one iota more of attention than I was before, but they felt that I was. And perception is everything. So squarely facing the person, as opposed to turning your body from them. Secondly, openly face them. Open body position is the opposite of, you know, closing up, you know, crossing your arms, crossing your legs, putting your hand in front of your face, you know, which is all putting barriers. It's a visual way of putting a barrier between you and the other person. If you've got open body position, you're communicating, my heart is open as well. L is for lean forward. If you're listening to somebody and you really want to encourage them, and you physically lean forward, and I don't mean so far that you're going to fall over, but, you know, just enough that what you're saying is, I want to capture every word you have to say. I'm really focused on you. That is a very subtle way of communicating encouragement. E is for eye contact, because that's how we say to people, I am really listening, and you matter. I am focusing on your eyes. R is for relax. That means don't be tapping things or fidgeting or whatever. Just relax your body, because what that's saying is, I'm not thinking about me. I'm not thinking about anything else. I am thinking about you. I'm totally focused on you. Something similar came up in Ross Campbell's book, How to Really Love Your Child. He says there are three ways that children really need to feel loved from their parents, and these are so true of ways to encourage them. One is focused attention, which I've just been talking to you about. Secondly is eye contact, and with children, touch is hugely important because they need to make that physical connection with their parents or with their teachers. And that one of the saddest things that ever happened in American schools is when teachers were told that it is no longer safe to touch children because of the possible allegations of abuse. When children desperately need, you know, the safe touch, you know, of just a hand across the shoulder or a hand on the head or sometimes a hug. And I'm so grateful for schools that don't have that no touching rule, because it was totally, totally anti-child. Children need to be touched. But when, as adults, when we're trying to encourage other people, you have to be looking for cues from others that touching me would be okay. In the ex-gay ministry that I'm involved with, when people come into the group, in the beginning, we do not make any kind of assumptions that it's okay to go up and hug somebody, because many of them have been sexually and physically abused. and they don't know what safe touch feels like. And there were many women, you know, you got even within 2 feet of them and they start flinching. And so hugging them is absolutely off limits. And then unless you ask permission, can I give you a hug? Well, you ask me permission, that's showing me respect and giving me dignity and putting me in charge of that decision of whether I'm willing to be touched or not, which they didn't get, since so many of these women, 60% of lesbian women were sexually abused growing up. 90% of them were either sexually, verbally, or physically or emotionally abused. 90% of them. So when you got abused people, they're not wanting to be touched very often unless you ask permission. Then there are verbal skills that we can use to encourage. One is to reflect back what someone is saying, which means acting like a mirror, reflecting back real problems that can be changed, not about addressing the person's behavior, which often can't. For example, a kid comes in and says, I hate school. There's too much homework and my stupid teacher's out to get me. To reflect back what they've said, you can say, wow, sounds like you're having a hard time with school, which is a whole lot better than a kid coming and saying, I hate school, there's too much homework, and my stupid teacher's out to get me. If our response is, your teacher is not stupid, that is not encouraging. That is not a door opener to further conversation. What you want to do is help somebody feel understood. Sounds like you're having a hard time in school. And you may be thinking, your teacher's not stupid, it's your attitude. But you don't say that. You reflect back what it was that you heard. And clarify is another verbal skill. Make sure you understand what the other person is saying. Ask what they mean. Or repeat back what you heard and say, did I get this right? One of my favorite shows on the radio is New Life Live, which happens at noon, from noon to 1 on K-Word 100.7. And this is, it's all counselors, and they have, it's a call-in program. And some of the counselors that are on there do this all the time. If what I'm hearing you say is right, they say, yada, yada, yada. Is that right? Did I get that right? And they're using this verbal skill to make sure I understand. By the way, it tends to be encouraging, but this is not actually part of an encouragement talk. One of the most powerful ways of addressing a problem with another person, especially a spouse, instead of pointing fingers and accusing people of, you know, I hate it when you do this, or you always, or you never, is to say, help me understand something here. And then you tell them what it is that you're seeing or what's concerning you. Can you help me understand, what are you thinking, what are you trying to do here? Help me understand is a very non-threatening way to say, we need to talk about this because it's not working for me. I got asked that not too long ago. Help me understand something. It seems that every time we need to go someplace important that we're at least 20 minutes late leaving the house. And I think I saw you doing things that could have waited till we got back. Help me understand. What is going through your head when you're doing this, when you're making us late? You know, which, if said without an edge in your voice, is very good. You can say the exact same words and it sounds really bad, but never mind. Clarifying, when you want to clarify to somebody, the other person gets the message that you want to make sure that you understand, and then they are encouraged. For example, a kid who says, I hate school, there's too much homework, and my stupid teacher's out to get me. What if the response is, bummer? So you're unhappy about the amount of time you're spending doing homework? Sounds like you're not real happy about your relationship with your teacher? And it's clarifying, and it's an open door to discuss it further. Let me give you some practical examples, some practical demonstrations of encouragement. One is to write little notes and letters of encouragement and support. This is probably the biggest one. Because particularly in the age of email, it takes a lot more to write a physical note and put it in an envelope and lick the envelope and address it and find a stamp and walk it out to your mailbox. And so when those things arrive in the mail, they have so much power to encourage. We used to have a pastor at Reinhardt who had the spiritual gift of encouragement, and he he had the church office print up postcards, yellow encouragement cards that were in the pews. And because so often people are at church and they think, I really want to encourage somebody. And so they could write a note on the back, flip it over. You don't have to know the person's name, just address. Put their name there, and the church office would look up their address, stamp it, and mail it. And if you got one of the yellow postcards from the church, man, you felt so blessed. I loved that. The next pastor doesn't have the gift of encouragement. Man, we're spending a lot of money on postage. We don't have that anymore. You can send out your own. Yeah, but it was a lot easier to do it when you were helping. Another thing we can do is to send candy or gum or a bookmark or a little tea bag even that says, I'm really behind you in prayer and I bought you a little gift just to show my support for you. But please be sensitive. If the person is diabetic or dieting, make sure it's sugar-free. But there's so much power in something little like that. It's just, you don't have to spend a lot of money to encourage somebody. You're just saying, I was thinking about you. Another thing you can do is have breakfast, lunch, or dessert, or even just coffee, which can cost as much as the others if you're at Starbucks, you know, with somebody. You don't, asking them out to dinner is like another quantum leap beyond breakfast, lunch, or dessert, or coffee. But there's something incredibly powerful and encouraging about saying, I want to spend time with you, and I just want to sit across the table from you, which is why we need to see communion as the time of intimacy with Jesus that it is, because Jesus is saying, come to my table and eat with me. It is a very intimate gesture. Another thing to do is to look people straight in the eye and smile, because when somebody gives us eye contact and they look us straight in the eye, we feel they really know I'm here. I'll tell you something. People in wheelchairs often do not get looked at in the eye, because a lot of people see the chair and they stop looking, and they feel defined by their disability. And I have seen that happen when I am in my wheelchair in an airport or at State Fair or at the grocery store or whatever, mall. And how many people just kind of avert their eyes and look away? But I'm a little naughty girl, and I tend to be very intense, and I will look very intentionally at people and smile, and I just wanted them to know, hi, I'm a real person. I am not my chair. I am a real person in here. There was a time several years ago when my kids were itty-bitty, I got a chance to go to Grace Academy and speak to the kids about what it's like to have a handicap. And I told them about looking, when people are in wheelchairs, look them in the eye and smile. It may be the only time they get it all day long. It is amazing the power of that. And also use their names, especially service personnel who, you know, often have them right there for you. Because Dale Carnegie got it right. The sweetest sound in the whole world to a person is the sound of their own name. And so use people's names. And sometimes we forget people's names, which is, it's worth it to work at remembering them. Use their names whenever possible. Ask questions about what's important to them. Usually it's somebody's family, their job, their family. Ask about their vacation. Ask about their church. There was a little old lady at the health club that I knew was a believer because we'd had previous conversations. And one day we were in the whirlpool together, and I said, so Nellie, how are things going at your church? And that was the door opener that just had her blah, and just she was hurting over something that was what happened at church, and she just needed to vent to somebody who would listen and nod and wince and say, wow, can I pray with you about that? It just, if you ask people questions about what's important to them, that can often take you to the place where they need encouragement. Do little things within your power to make life easier. Carol Pond, thank you very much for coming up and freeing me from my Club Med Waxahachie bracelet. You know, the green bracelet that's been there all weekend? That was a very kind thing, and it encouraged me. It's amazing how many little things it's in our power to do. Traffic is a great place to exercise this. You can wave somebody in with a smile. I look for opportunities. Sometimes I will, if I'm not in a hurry, I will deliberately be in the merge lane so that I can be the one to make sure that somebody gets on. I will slow down so that they get on. And then I wave to them, hi, did that on purpose. Wanted to bless you. Romans 12:13 says, practice hospitality. The actual Greek of practice hospitality means love of strangers. There's no better place to love on strangers than in traffic. Or, you know, in the long line at the grocery store. You know, you can even let somebody in front of you. Oh, so the people behind you were going to get mad. Oh, well. Notice when somebody does something worthy of praise and tell them. It takes so little. Like, for example, if you're in public at a banquet or a luncheon or something and the servers are really good at taking your place away or refilling your iced tea or your coffee or whatever, look them in the eye and say, you are taking such good care of us. Thank you. And be very deliberate in your praise. Sometimes it may be the only kind thing that they've heard all day long or that they're going to hear. Another thing is hug therapy. And, you know, they've done statistics. I think we need 14 hugs a day or something, and most people are way less than that. But we all, God made us to have skin hunger. We need to be touched. We need to be held. Particularly be aware of widows and divorcees and separated people and some married women who aren't getting hugs, who aren't in a position to be getting tactile reinforcement that way. Someone recently told me that some of the most encouraging things that have ever happened to her is when somebody walks up to her in the hall and doesn't even say a word, they just hug her and then they go on. You don't even have to say anything. You can just hug somebody. My sister's a nurse and she used to work in the emergency room. We come from a very huggy family. And one day Julie decided that she was going to collect hugs. And it didn't matter from whom. She collected hugs from other nurses, and she was collecting hugs from doctors. She was collecting hugs from patients. I mean, she went up to people and said, hi, I'm collecting hugs today. Can I get one from you? And we are bear huggers. I mean, if we hug you, you know you have been hugged, you know. So somewhere around 4 in the afternoon, she gives a doctor a hug, and she goes, thank you, you're number 56. And he looked at her and went, and he kind of wiped off the cooties. She thought that was very rude. But hugging people is incredibly encouraging, particularly people who have the moist eyes. And, you know, you don't have to, sometimes you don't have time to ask somebody what's going on. I have gone up to people and say, you look like you could use a hug. And the grateful look on their face, you know, yeah. Yeah, and sometimes they can't even say yeah because then they'd start crying. Now, I want to give you some others. This last Tuesday, I was teaching Bible study at Reinhardt, and I told the women that I was going to be doing this message this morning for y'all. And I said, I would like, before we start teaching, what I would like for you to do is tell me some practical ways that people have recently encouraged you, some real life ways that encouraged you. And we didn't have any trouble getting people to keep talking. So let me tell you the list that, oh, I will give you that in a minute. I forgot this slide was there. One of the things that we can do to encourage people is to use the love language of the person that we want to encourage. This would generally be somebody that you know. Gary Chapman has a great book called The Languages of Love, The Five Languages of Love, which are focused attention, which is spending time with someone, gifts, acts of service, physical touch, and verbal affirmation. The best way to encourage someone is in the area of their love language, because that's the best way that they feel loved. Which is why if you don't have this book, or at least understand the concepts behind these, it is amazing what a difference it makes in your family if you know your family's and your friends' love languages, because you're probably going to love other people with your love language. But they're probably not going to have the same one as you, and so they're not necessarily going to feel loved. One of our son's love languages is gifts, and you don't even have to give him very much, but man, he just loves for you to give him anything. And the other one is physical touch. Neither one of them appreciate the other person's love language, because the one with gifts, his first full sentence was, I hate kisses. And the one whose love language is physical touch could care less about stuff. You know, you say, I got this for you. Huh, thanks. You know, so you need to know people's love language. So that's another way to encourage. Here are the ones from my church. Compliment people's character. I mean, as women, we enjoy hearing, you sure look great today. But it goes far deeper if you say, man, you know, I so love it, or I so respect you for the person of honesty that you are. I love it that I can always count on you to tell the truth. Complimenting people's character is a great way to encourage. Another one said, share your story of doubting and struggling with someone who's doubting and struggling. Because it's so often, particularly for new believers, or people who are just starting to grow, to think that all other Christians have it all together and are these deeply spiritual people who have walked with God for very, very long. And they think, am I the only one who wonders sometimes, God, are you really there? Is this all a dream? Or their struggles to trust God or whatever. And all we see in other people is the mask that other people present. So being honest, being authentic and transparent, you know, this is what this one lady brought up. Another thing is to validate people's comments. When people say something, don't just let it slide as if it was never even spoken. You can, even if you disagree with it, you can say, I hear what you're saying. You don't have to say, and it's garbage, you know, but validate when they say something, don't just ignore it. When someone visits the church, or your Sunday school class or Bible study or whatever, send them a card or an email or a call to say, I'm so glad you came. So many people said, oh man, that made the biggest difference in the world. Somebody noticed that I came and visited, and that's why I came back. And then one of the women who was a card sender said, send the card senders a card. Because often they're not on the receiving end of it. She goes, you just have no idea what it does for me when somebody thinks to send me a card. And also, when someone is grieving because they've lost a loved one, remember that person's grief goes on and on and on. In the first few days, and even a couple of weeks, there's a lot of, you know, expressions of sympathy, and I'm here for you. But it's real easy for that to just go away. And one of the women who had lost a baby said, I so appreciated it that 6 weeks after my baby was born, somebody who had experienced it came up to me and said, it's 6 weeks today. And I just want you to know I love you and I'm praying for you, and I know it's really hard, because I'll tell you what, it takes 6 weeks for the shock to wear off. When there's been a death, particularly a sudden death, you're numb for 6 weeks. That's God's grace to allow you to function. And then the grace wears off, so to speak. The numbness wears off and the rawness is there. One of the best things you can do is when somebody has lost someone, to mark your calendar for 6 weeks or 7 weeks down the road, then send them a card. Then send them a phone call and let them know, I still remember that you are in pain. Remember the basics. People want to be listened to. People want to be understood. People want to feel loved and significant. And everybody needs to be encouraged. Make yourself available to God. And expect God to open doors to be able to encourage somebody else. That's what happened in the opening story about the boy whose suicide was averted. That is a true story, by the way, whose suicide was averted because his dad encouraged him. Little Jamie Scott was trying out for a part in a school play. His mother knew that he had his heart set on being in it, although she was afraid that he wouldn't get picked. On the day the parts were awarded, when his mom went to get him from school, Jamie rushed up to her, his eyes shining with pride and excitement, and he said, "Guess what, Mom? I've been chosen to clap and cheer." Not everybody's going to get a starring role and stuff, but we can all clap and cheer for other people. That was a very wise teacher who appointed that boy a role to clap and cheer. Encouragers are the ones who clap and cheer, and sometimes they're very quiet clapping and cheering, and sometimes it's really big and loudy and raucous and fabulous. But each of us has an opportunity to be Jesus with skin on to people whose hearts desperately need encouraging. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, thank you for being a prime encourager, and examples of it are all over the New Testament. And Lord, I just pray that you would teach us how we can be sensitive to those who are in need of encouragement. Thank you, Lord, for the way that you are so willing to teach us. Thank you for those with the gift, the spiritual gift of encouragement, who can model and teach others how to encourage each other daily so that we may not be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. And Lord, we're going to have lots of opportunities to put this into practice this week. And I just pray that you would be the empowerment behind our encouragings. In Jesus' name, amen.